Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. We are continuing our trek through Proverbs. We're at chapter 15, which I will call Proverbs of Solomon, part 6. Solomon begins in verse 1, Proverbs 15. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. I'm going to give you some Old Testament examples of how a gentle answer turns away wrath. Let's take Gideon first. If you recall, after Gideon had his famous battle with the Midianites, where he put the torches under the clay pots and broke them and charged out with his 300 men, he chased the Midianites across the Jordan River back into the Transjordan area. And we read in Judges 8, 1 through 3, "Then the men of Ephraim said to him, 'What is this thing you have done to us, not calling us when you went to fight against Midian?' And they contended with him vigorously. But he said to them, 'What have I done now in comparison with you? Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer?'" And I need to explain that. Ephraim, of course, is on the west side of the Jordan River. Gideon did not invite them to come fight with him and partake of the spoils, and so they're mad. And so Gideon uses a soft answer to turn away the wrath of the Ephraimites. He says, "Look, you just gleaned a little bit of stuff, a little bit of grapes. Even that's better than the full vintage when I reap all of the grapes of Abiezer," which was on the west side. Abiezer was the head of one of the families of Manasseh that settled west of the Jordan. And so Gideon is buttering up the people of Ephraim, giving them a gentle answer. He says in verse 3 of Judges 8, Gideon does, "God has given the leaders of Midian, Oreb and Zeb, into your hands." Oreb and Zeb were the two Midianite kings that Gideon was chasing. "God is giving these two into your hands, Ephraimites, and what was I able to do in comparison with you?" In other words, Gideon buttered up the Ephraimites pretty doggone good, and it turned away their wrath. How about David? Remember when David got angry at Nabal when he was running away from Saul in the desert areas south and southwest of Jerusalem, and he was providing security for Nabal's sheep with David's little band of soldiers, and then Nabal didn't invite him to the sheep shearing festival, and so David decides he's going to go up there and whack Nabal, whose name means fool. Nabal was married to a beautiful woman named Abigail. So we read that in 1 Samuel 25, verses 25 through 32. Abigail says this to David. This is the soft answer, the gentle answer that's going to turn away David's wrath. "Please do not let my lord pay attention to this worthless man, Nabal." That's her husband, this worthless man. "For as his name is, so is he." His name means fool. "Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, your maidservant, did not see the young men of my lord whom you sent. Now therefore, my lord, as the Lord lives, as your soul lives, since the Lord has restrained you from shedding blood and from avenging yourself by your own hand, now then let your enemies and those who seek evil against my lord be as Nabal. Now let this gift which your maidservant has brought to my lord be given to the young men who accompany my lord." And the story goes on. What Abigail is doing is she's bringing out a bunch of gifts. That's her gentle answer to David, and David doesn't kill Nabal, and he ends up marrying Abigail. Abigail goes on and says, "Please forgive the transgression of your maidservant. David, you're fighting the battles of Yahweh. Evil will not be found in all your days." A gentle answer mixed with a little bit of flattery. David's won over. He marries her. Now let's look at some other proverbs which teach the same thing. Proverbs 25:15, Solomon says, "By forbearance a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue breaks the bone." Proverbs 15:18, "A hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but the slow to anger calms a dispute." Proverbs 14:29, "He who is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who is quick-tempered exalts folly." Proverbs 16:32, "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who captures a city." Soft answers, hold your tongue, hold your anger. It's a great spiritual virtue to be able to do that. And of course, as Christians, we need the Holy Spirit to help us do that. Now, Solomon says at the end of verse 1, a harsh word stirs up anger. And that's true. I will give you some Old Testament examples, three of them, in just a minute. But sometimes harsh words are necessary. Think about when Jesus spoke to the Pharisees. Those were harsh words, but they were necessary to be spoken. And as a matter of fact, Jesus' harsh words to the Pharisees did stir up their anger. Let's look at some other Old Testament examples of how harsh words stir up anger. The Ephraimites are complaining to Jephthah that they weren't summoned to go fight the Ammonites. It's interesting. The Ephraimites complained to Gideon because they weren't allowed to go fight the Midianites east of the Jordan River. I guess because they wanted some spoil. Same thing with Jephthah, who was one of the judges. The Ephraimites weren't allowed to go fight the Ammonites with Jephthah, so they're angry. So their angry words are going to stir up strife. Judges 12, verses 1 through 4, Then the men of Ephraim were summoned, and they crossed to Zaphon, and said to Jephthah, Zaphon is just a place name, Why did you cross over, Jephthah, to fight against the sons of Ammon without calling us to go with you? We will burn your house down on you. Well, that's some harsh words. Jephthah said to them, I and my people were at great strife with the sons of Ammon. When I called you, you did not deliver me from their hand. When I saw that you would not deliver me, I took my life in my hands, crossed over against the sons of Ammon, and the Lord gave them into my hand. Why then have you come up to me this day to fight against me? Then Jephthah gathered all the men of Gilead. Gilead's on the east side of the Jordan River. And Jephthah fought Ephraim and the men of Gilead. Jephthah's men defeated Ephraim because they said, You are fugitives of Ephraim, O Gileadites. In other words, we've got you under our thumb. You're in our power. You are our fugitives. Blah, blah, blah. And nuts to you. And Jephthah says, We'll take care of you. Harsh words stir up strife. I can't help but think of certain political actors in the 2020s and the late 2018s in America. I will not mention any names because everybody is just calling everybody all sorts of horrible names. And politics has always been a blood sport, but I've never seen it like it is now. And when somebody calls somebody a bleepity bleepity bleep bleep, the tweets come flying from the other direction, and those tweets call the first tweeters blankety blank 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 bad people. Hey, harsh words stirs up anger. Well, that was the Ephraimite stirring up Jephthah. How about Nabal, Abigail's aforementioned husband, whose name means fool? This is what he said to David's servants that prompted Abigail to try to rescue her life because of this scene here. 1 Samuel 25, verses 10 through 11. But Nabal answered David's servants and said, Who is David and who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants today who are each breaking away from his master. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my meat that I have slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men whose origin I do not know? In other words, David, we're not going to give you anything for all that military protection you've been giving us. Harsh words. And they stirred up anger because David took his little band of mercenary soldiers, not mercenaries, his little band of soldiers and went after Nabal in order to whack him. We read this in 1 Samuel 25, 21 and 22. Now David had said, Surely in vain I have guarded all that this man has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him, and he has returned me evil for good. May God do so to the enemies of David, and more also, if by morning I leave as much as any one male of any who belonged to him. David was going to massacre them. Harsh words stir up strife. And of course, the classic example is King Rehoboam of Israel. At one time, he was king of the whole 12 tribes. When his father Solomon died, he took over the kingdom, and then there was a dispute about how many taxes the northern 10 tribes were supposed to pay. And so this is what happened. 1 Kings 12, verses 13 through 14, the king, that's Rehoboam, answered the people harshly, for he forsook the advice of the elders which they had given him. And he spoke to them, spoke not to the elders, but to the people, according to the advice of the young men, his young advisors, Rehoboam's young advisors, according to that advice, he spoke to the people, saying, My father made your yoke heavy, that's Solomon, but I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. Those are harsh words, and it started a civil war, and Rehoboam lost 10 of the northern tribes. So as a general rule, we need to remember, harsh words stir up anger. And if you're going to use harsh words, you better be speaking like Jesus prophetically against sin and evil. And you better be expecting wrath to come back on your head. We move now to Proverbs 15:2. The tongue of the wise, says Solomon, makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. Now, knowledge is just another word for wisdom. There's no real distinction, at least in Proverbs, that I've been able to see. The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable. Now, what Solomon is referring to here is how knowledge is delivered to the hearer. We note at the end of verse 2 that the mouth of fools spouts folly. That means that as soon as the fool sees something he needs to say, he says it without restraint, without pondering, without holding back. But the wise waits until an opportune time in order to deliver his wisdom, because sometimes people aren't ready to accept the wisdom that you want to give them. This is what Adam Clark says. This is very difficult to know, when to speak and when to be silent, what to speak and what to leave unspoken, the manner that is best and most suitable to the occasion, the subject, the circumstances, and the persons. All these are difficulties, often even to the wisest men. Even wise counsel may be foolishly given. Another proverb that expresses roughly the same thing is Proverbs 12, verse 23. Solomon says, "A prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims folly." So in other words, sometimes you've got truth, but it's not the right time to deliver it, because the hearer of your truth might not be ready to hear it. I remember there was a young Chinese convert I had who was a little bit headstrong, and she used to say that when she saw fat people on the street, she would tell them they're fat. I said, "Don't do that. That's rude." She says, "It's the truth, isn't it? I need to tell them the truth." Let me tell you something. Sometimes the truth is better kept concealed. For example, all you men out there whose wives have gained weight, let me give you a piece of free marriage advice. Don't tell your wife that she's gotten fat. Just don't do it. Maybe get her friend to tell her. I don't know, but don't do it yourself. Proverbs 15:3, Solomon says, "The eyes of the Lord are in every place, watching the evil and the good." How can the eyes of the Lord be in every place? He doesn't have eyes, of course. This is an anthropomorphic expression, but God is omniscient, and he's also provident. He knows everything, and he is able to arrange all the events of history to work things out for his good and for his people's good. That's providence. Omniscience and providence. The eyes of the Lord are in every place. God's watching the evil and the good. He's watching evil and good things. He's also watching evil and good people. He's watching the evil people so they don't hurt the good people. We go down to Proverbs 15:4. Solomon says, "A soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirit." A soothing tongue, John Gill says, pacifies contending parties and heals divisions between them. Perversion in a tongue produces, as John Gill says, quote, "impure, unchaste, unsavory, and corrupt language, does mischief to the spirits of men. Evil communications corrupt the heart and manners, defile the soul and the conversation." In other words, guard your tongue. Now, a soothing tongue is said to be, by Solomon here, a tree of life. This, of course, is a reference to the tree of life in the Garden of Eden. A tree which produces good fruit to eat is a tree that produces life, because fruit allows one to live, a tree of life. So a soothing tongue brings life, basically, is what it's saying. We read in Proverbs 3:18, "She," referring to wisdom personified, "she is a tree of life to those who take hold of her." A tree of life. Proverbs 11:30, "The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life." So righteous people produce fruit, and that's the same thing as a tree producing fruit, which produces life. And a soothing tongue produces life. It's a tree of life. So that's kind of the opposite of an unruly tongue, a perverted tongue which produces evil. But on the other hand, a soothing tongue, a tongue producing good fruit, produces life. We go down to Proverbs 15:5. "A fool rejects his father's discipline, but he who regards reproof is sensible." Now, discipline shows up everywhere in the Proverbs, and I'm almost hesitant to read you all the verses again, but I will, just to drive the point home, how important discipline is. Other proverbs showing this, Proverbs 13:24, "The one who will not use the rod hates his son, but the one who loves him disciplines him diligently." A loving parent will discipline, an unloving parent will not. Proverbs 29:15, "A rod of correction imparts wisdom, but a youth left to himself is a disgrace to his mother." You want to see a mother shamed? Watch her son go to jail because she never disciplined him. Proverbs 29:17, "Discipline your son and it will bring you peace of mind and give you delight." You want peace in your family and in your home? Discipline your son. Don't let him run wild. Proverbs 22:15, "Foolishness is tangled up in the heart of a youth. The rod of discipline will drive it away from him." Proverbs 19:18, "Discipline your son while there is hope. Don't be intent on killing him. In other words, you don't discipline your son, you'll kill him. He'll kill himself. Proverbs 22:6, teach a youth about the way he should go, even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Proverbs 23, verses 13 through 14, don't withhold discipline from a youth. If you beat him with a rod, he will not die. Strike him with a rod, and you will rescue his life from Sheol. It's ironic. You know, people say, oh, child abuse, you discipline your kid, you're going to kill him. No. What's going to kill him is the lack of discipline that he will experience because you don't discipline him. Proverbs 6:23, Solomon says, for a command is a lamp, teaching is a light, and corrective discipline is the way to life. You want to live? Discipline. You want your children to live? Discipline them. Proverbs 3:11-12, do not despise the Lord's instruction, my son, and do not loathe his discipline. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves, just as a father, the son he delights in. Discipline is an act of love. Proverbs 20:30, lashes and wounds purge away evil, and beatings cleanse the innermost hearts. Ooh, that's a rough one. Now, those lashes and wounds are not said to be administered by a parent to his child. It could mean just lashes and wounds of life that you receive from people, and they discipline you and make you suffer, and then you're not so evil anymore. It's obviously not saying that we have the right to lash and wound our kids. Corporal punishment needs to be reasonable, doesn't wound the child. Flat paddle will not hurt the child, it will pain the child, but it will not cause physical damage. As James Dobson used to say, Proverbs 15:10, discipline is harsh for the one who leaves the path. The one who hates correction will die. The further you leave the path, the worse the discipline has to be in order to get you back on the path. But if you get off the path and you refuse that discipline, you're going to die. Proverbs 3:11, do not despise the Lord's instruction, my son, and do not loathe his discipline. Proverbs 13:18, poverty and disgrace come to those who ignore discipline, but the one who accepts correction will be honored. Let's look at some other Old Testament scriptures teaching the same thing. Psalms 94:12, Lord, happy is the man you discipline and teach from your law. Whoa, I'm happy. I just got spanked by my daddy. Oh. Psalms 39:11, you discipline a man with punishment for sin, consuming like a moth what is precious to him. Every man is only a vapor. God disciplines as well as an earthly father. Job 5:17, this is Eliphaz speaking. See how happy the man is God corrects. Same thing that was said in Psalms 94. Do not reject the discipline of the Almighty. Eliphaz, although he spoke some dumb stuff in that book, he was correct here. Deuteronomy 8:5, keep in mind that the Lord your God has been disciplining you just as a man disciplines his son. Deuteronomy 4:36, first part of the verse, out of the heavens he let you hear his voice to discipline you. God speaking to Israel. And of course, in the New Testament, Hebrews 6:4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. Paul says to the Ephesians, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. The Lord's discipline. Which, of course, means you don't beat them till they're half dead. It's the Lord's discipline, the way he would discipline, because the Lord always disciplines in love. Of course, the famous go-to verse in the New Testament for discipline is Hebrews 12:5-11. And you have forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons. My son, do not take the Lord's discipline lightly, or faint when you are reproved by him. Two ways you can react to discipline. You can either laugh it off and say, oh, who cares? I can take it or leave it. On the other hand, when God disciplines you, you roll over in a dead faint and feel sorry for yourself and start grieving. Two extremes. Just be happy when you're disciplined. Get it over with and move on. Verse 6, for the Lord disciplines the one he loves and punishes every son he receives. Endure suffering as a discipline. God is dealing with you as sons. For what son is there that a father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, which all receive, then you are bastard children and not sons. Furthermore, we had natural fathers discipline us, and we respected them. Shouldn't we submit even more to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time based on what seemed good to them, but he does it for our benefit. Contrast between earthly fathers' discipline is they're not perfect. They do what they think is right, what seems good to them, but boy, when God does it, he does it for our benefit perfectly so that we can share in his holiness, because God is omniscient. He knows how to discipline you just right. Verse 11, no discipline seems enjoyable at the time, but painful, of course. Later on, however, it yields the fruit of peace and righteousness to those who have been trained by it. And last of all, in Revelation chapter 3, verse 19, we read what Jesus says, as many as I love, I rebuke and discipline. If Jesus loves you, and if you are a follower of his, a disciple of his, he does love you, well, then he's going to rebuke and discipline you. So be committed and repent. So in other words, when you receive discipline from the Lord, just say, I'm sorry, Lord. Boom. Help me not do that again. Mortify the deeds of my flesh and move on. Now, Solomon, at the end of verse 5 in Proverbs 15, says that the one who regards reproof is sensible. That implies that the one who does not regard reproof or rebuke or discipline, he's a fool. Here are some other scriptures that say that. Psalms 141, verse 5, first part of the verse. Let the righteous smite me in kindness and reprove me. It is oil upon the head. Do not let my head refuse it. Hit me again. Tell me some more. Proverbs 4:1. Hear, O sons, the instruction of a father, and give attention that you may gain understanding. Proverbs 10:17. He is on the path of life who heeds instruction, but he who ignores reproof goes astray. Proverbs 13:1. A wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. Solomon was really concerned about discipline. We go now to verse 6 in Proverbs 15. Great wealth is in the house of the righteous, but trouble is in the income of the wicked. The NIV says income of the wicked brings them trouble. That's what it means. You make money evilly, you ain't got nothing but trouble. You're running a rackets enterprise in a big city back in the 30s and 40s. How many people get killed in gangland shootings? You watch enough of those old gangster movies. They making money illicitly, it ain't nothing but trouble. As John Gill says, quote, they have much trouble in getting their riches by which they pierce themselves through with many sorrows. They have much trouble in keeping them, cannot rest nor sleep because of their abundance, lest it should be taken away from them. And they have much trouble in parting with them, their riches, when they are by one providence or another stripped of them, stripped of their wealth. And besides, they have them with a curse, have their wealth with a curse, and are attended with uneasiness on one account or another. Proverbs 15:7, the lips of the wise spread knowledge, but the hearts of fools are not so. Here are some other scriptures, other proverbs about the lips of the wise spreading knowledge. Proverbs 15:2, the tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. That's a verse I just talked about 5 verses ago, talking about when you let other people know your knowledge, you need to make that knowledge acceptable to other people by revealing that knowledge at the proper time and not just spouting it out like a fool. So a wise person spreads knowledge, wisely, of course. Proverbs 10, verse 20 through 21, the tongue of the righteous is as choice silver. The heart of the wicked is worth little. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for lack of understanding. Spreading knowledge, feeding many. Spreading knowledge in verse 7 of Proverbs 15 and Proverbs 10, verse 21, feeding many. Have you ever thought about why so many people watch these talk shows and listen to therapists and get on YouTube and listen to all these people give dating advice? People are looking for wisdom. Of course, they don't go to the Bible where all the wisdom they need is located. We go to Proverbs 15, verse 8. Solomon says, the sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is his delight. You might ask, why is a wicked person sacrificing? Well, it's because he's a hypocrite. He's going through the motions. Even wicked people like to go through religious motions. There will always be religious hypocrites. Here's some other scriptures showing that. Isaiah 1:11. What are your multiplied sacrifices to me, says the Lord? I have had enough of burnt offerings of rams and the fat of fed cattle, and I take no pleasure in the blood of bulls, lambs, or goats. Proverbs 21:27, Solomon says this, the sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination. How much more when he brings it with evil intent? So I guess a wicked person can sacrifice out of habit when he doesn't really mean it. But even worse than that is when he makes a sacrifice deliberately trying to deceive God and to deceive people who are watching him, who think that he's a godly person. He's virtue signaling, to use the modern jargon. This is an abomination to the Lord. But the prayer of the upright is God's delight. God loves for us to pray. That should be enough to answer the common objection. God knows what I need. Why should I pray? Because God tells us to pray. That's why. The prayer of the upright is God's delight. He likes us to pray. Proverbs 15, verse 9. The way of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but he loves one who pursues righteousness. Now, of course, that doesn't mean he's pursuing works righteousness. It means he pursues righteousness which is activated and energized by the Holy Spirit living within us in the New Testament, motivated by faith in the Old Testament. You believe and then you do. You don't do in order to become righteous. We go to Proverbs 15:10. Grievous punishment is for him who forsakes the way. He who hates reproof will die. When I see the way, it reminds me of Taoism, because Taoism always talked about the way. There was some way that as you travel through the universe, there is a correct way to go and the universe will treat you good. And sometimes I wonder if Taoism is why people are always saying, well, the universe told me. The universe told me this. The universe told me that. The people in this country, as they become more godly and unchristian and anti-Christian, they look for substitutes. The way. Well, the way, of course, is the way of God's righteousness and the way of God and his commandments. Psalms 119:1 says, how blessed are those whose way is blameless, who walk in the law of the Lord. Proverbs 15:10, on the other hand, says, grievous punishment is for him who forsakes the way. Grievous. That means really bad. He who hates reproof will die. I just watched a documentary on Janis Joplin's last 24 hours. Very tragic situation. Fantastic blues singer who threw her life away shooting up cocaine. Unfortunately, she got an accidental dose of cocaine that was between 40 and 50% pure when the average amount of cocaine sold on the street was 3%, and it stopped her heart and she's gone. That's grievous punishment. We go now to Proverbs 15:11. Sheol and Abaddon lie open before the Lord. How much more are the hearts of men? Now, Sheol is the Hebrew for the grave or death or the place of departed spirits where they await until the resurrection, as Adam Clark says. We'll just take it as the grave, death. Abaddon means in Hebrew destruction or doom. Clark says that it refers to a place, the place of torment. Well, I'm not exactly sure what all these words mean. I don't think anybody does, but we'll just say it's not good. Sheol is death. Abaddon is destruction. Death and destruction lie open before the Lord. In other words, God sees death and destruction. He knows who's going there and he knows who's not. He knows who's following the path that leads there and those who are staying on the path that leads away from there. So if God can see death and destruction, how much more can he see the hearts of men? He knows what we're doing. You can't hide anything from an omnipotent God. Proverbs 15:12, a scoffer does not love one who reproves him. He will not go to the wise. In other words, a scoffer will not go to a wise man to receive wisdom which might deliver him from death. Oh no, he's too busy making fun of wisdom. Proverbs 9:8 says, do not reprove a scoffer or he will hate you. Reprove a wise man and he will love you. A wise man will love you, but a scoffer does not. He does not love one who reproves him. In verse 12, Proverbs 15. So that means you've got to be careful when you hand out reproof. People are very sensitive about that. If you've got somebody who's willing to listen, then it's easy to reprove him because he will be a wise man because he's accepting advice and wisdom. And a wise man will love you, says Proverbs 9:8. We go to Proverbs 15:13. A joyful heart makes a cheerful face, but when the heart is sad, the spirit is broken. If your heart's joyful, your face is cheerful. That actually illustrates the close connection that there is between the body and the mind and the emotions. Why do people, when they get sick, end up having a condition in which their mood is foul? Because they're sick. That's why. Their body's messed up, and so their emotions get mixed up. And the converse is true. If a joyful heart will make your face be cheerful. The last part of the proverb, verse 13 of Proverbs 15, but when the heart is sad, the spirit is broken. And Solomon is expressing a truth of human nature that when things go bad, your spirit can be broken, your spirit can become broken, and you just don't want to do anything. I just read about an earlier Austrian Habsburg king who, Leopold was his name, I think it was Leopold the First, who suffered some reverses, some military reverses, and as a result, his spirit was broken and he just holed up in a castle, wouldn't talk to anybody. And as a result, the people started rebelling, the nobles did, and all of a sudden, Leopold comes out, gets an army together, and gets his kingdom back. But meanwhile, his spirit was broken, he couldn't move. Depression is a serious thing. It will break you. It will make some people commit suicide. It is no laughing matter. And there are a lot of people that are depressed, including Christians. But of course, Christians have the comfort of the Holy Spirit. Non-Christians don't. And so they are in bad, bad trouble when they get depressed. Proverbs 15:14. Solomon says, "The mind of the intelligent seeks knowledge, but the mouth of fools feeds on folly." The mind of the intelligent seeks what kind of knowledge? Gill says, knowledge of divine and spiritual things, which means it's not intellectual knowledge that the intelligent are seeking. They're seeking wisdom. We tend to think of knowledge as academic knowledge or factual knowledge, but this is wisdom. That's the way Solomon uses that word knowledge. In the Proverbs, it's talking about wisdom. How do you use the factual data at hand? So you know that a wise person seeks more wisdom. He doesn't stop. He keeps going. Proverbs 9:9 exhibits the same idea. Give instruction to a wise man and he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous man and he will increase his learning. So wise people get wiser. The mouth of fools feeds on folly, John Gill says. The fool feeds on foolish talking and jesting, on foolish and unlearned questions, on foolish and false doctrines, on foolish and hurtful lust, on wind and ashes. Moving now to Proverbs 15:15, we read, "All the days of the afflicted are bad, but a cheerful heart has a continual feast." We read in Genesis 47:9 this, "So Jacob said to Pharaoh," this is when the patriarch Jacob was down in Egypt because of the famine in the Promised Land, "Jacob said to Pharaoh, the years of my sojourning are 130. Few and unpleasant have been the years of my life." Few? 130 years of few? Well, that's nice. But he says his whole life has been unpleasant. And it was. There was a lot of bad things that happened in Jacob's life. And Solomon says here in Proverbs 15:15, he just says that the days of the afflicted are bad, which seems to me just an observation, not an exhortation one way or the other. Cheerful heart is a continual feast. And basically, Solomon's saying that your emotions are important. It's much better to have happy emotions, a cheerful heart, than afflicted emotions. But of course, we can't really choose that, can we? Because some people have a tough road to hoe, as we say, and they have a lot of bad stuff that happens in their lives. Paul the Apostle ended up in jail, and he wrote the letter to the Philippians while he was in jail, and he constantly said, "Rejoice, rejoice. Again, I say rejoice." His cheerful heart had a continual feast, even though he was in jail. Proverbs 15:16, Solomon says, "Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and turmoil with it." Now, this verse does not mean that poverty is a good thing. Poverty is a bad thing, but it is nonetheless better than having money and turmoil that goes with having money. A lot of people have a lot of money, but if they get it through illicit means or by working 25 hours a day, what good is the money? Timothy says in 1 Timothy 6:6, "But godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment." Godliness and contentment, that's great gain. Making money with turmoil? No. Nothing good about that. You want to borrow money from the mob and have to pay it back with ever-increasing rates of interest, knowing that when the mob forecloses on you, they foreclose on you physically, breaking your legs, throw you in the river? I'd rather be poor than that. Proverbs 15:17, Solomon says, "Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than a fattened ox served with hatred." Fattened ox served with hatred reminds me of these meals that you go to, maybe a bunch of political people or business people or academic people sitting around, and everybody's smiling with their hypocritical smiles, and half the people at the table hate the other half of the people at the table, but they're going through the motions so they can stay alive in the corporate jungle or the academic jungle. Better to just have a dish of vegetables and love than a fattened ox. Notice the contrast between the meager fare, the dish of vegetables, and the luxuriant fare, the fattened ox. This is just another way of saying that money can't buy you happiness. Proverbs 17:1 is one of 5 verses I'm going to read from the wisdom literature showing how being poor with love is much better than being rich without love. Proverbs 17:1, "Better is a dry morsel and quietness with it than a house full of feasting with strife." Ecclesiastes 4:6, again written by Solomon, "One hand full of rest is better than two fists full of labor and striving after wind." Proverbs 19:1, better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than he who is perverse in speech and is a fool. Proverbs 16:8, better is a little with righteousness than great income with injustice. Proverbs 28:6, better is the poor who walks in his integrity than he who is crooked, though he be rich. We go now to Proverbs 15:18. Solomon says, a hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but the slow to anger calms a dispute. Solomon has a lot to say about people losing their temper. I'll read you some of his Proverbs. Proverbs 14:29. He who is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who is quick-tempered exalts folly. Proverbs 16:32. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who captures a city. Proverbs 15:1, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Of course, harsh words flow from a hot-tempered man. Proverbs 25:15, by forbearance a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue breaks the bone. Proverbs 29:11, a fool always loses his temper, but a wise man holds it back. Proverbs 12:16, a fool's anger is known at once, but a prudent man conceals dishonor. Proverbs 14:17, a quick-tempered man acts foolishly, and a man of evil devices is hated. Proverbs 29:22, an angry man stirs up strife, and a hot-tempered man abounds in transgression. The moral of this story is, control your temper. Proverbs 15:19, Solomon says, the way of the lazy is as a hedge of thorns, but the path of the upright is a highway. Now, I've quoted in previous audios many, many proverbs about Solomon's distaste for laziness, about the sluggard lying on his bed, a little slumber, a little sleep, a little folding of the hands to rest. I'm not going to read all those again, but we want to look at the metaphor here. The way of the lazy is as a hedge of thorns. A lazy man's walking along, and there are thorns along the left and right sides of the way that he is walking, and to get through those thorns, it's going to take some effort to get through thorns. But the lazy man is too lazy to even try. His laziness has created such apprehension that the lazy man will not break through any obstacles. Here's a selection of three proverbs illustrating similar points. Proverbs 20, verse 4, Solomon says, the sluggard does not plow after the autumn, so he begs during the harvest and has nothing. You got to plow so you can plant, so you can grow, so you can harvest. You got to work. Proverbs 22:13, the sluggard says, there's a lion outside. I will be killed in the streets. But, of course, the sluggard doesn't do anything about going out and getting rid of the lion. To be honest with you, I'm a little bit sympathetic. There might be something more than laziness at play here. There might be some fear involved, but at any rate, that's the idea. Proverbs 26:13, the sluggard says, there's a lion in the road. A lion is in the open square. Same thing. Sluggard complains, but he doesn't do anything about the obstacle. Go down to Proverbs 15:20. Solomon says, a wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish man despises his mother. Two relevant proverbs. Proverbs 30, verse 17, the eye that mocks a father and scorns a mother, the ravens of the valley will pick it out, and the young eagles will eat it. Respect your mother and father. People who don't respect their mother and father are crazy. Proverbs 10:1, a wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish son is a grief to his mother. When it says a foolish man despises his mother, you could take that a couple of ways. You could say it is a foolish thing to despise one's own mother. Or you could say a foolish man, because of his folly, brings about bad things in his life, thus causing his mother a lot of grief. And by doing that, he is despising his mother, indirectly, if you will. But either way, wise people make their parents happy, not sad. Proverbs 15, verse 21, Solomon says, folly is joy to him who lacks sense, but a man of understanding walks straight. Folly is joy. Folly is just another word for sin. All sin is pleasant for a while. I'm sure the first snort of cocaine makes the snorter feel wonderful. But a man of understanding walks straight. A man of understanding will not take that first snort of cocaine. Proverbs 10:23 says, doing wickedness is like sport to a fool. Well, a sport is fun. People do it for fun, and people sin for fun, and they don't realize, because they lack sense, that they're killing themselves. On the contrary, a man of understanding walks straight, Proverbs 3:6 says, in all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. So straight, the straight way, is a metaphor for a righteous way that avoids sin. We go down to Proverbs 15, verse 22. Solomon says, without consultation, plans are frustrated, but with many counselors, they succeed. Now, in a previous proverb, I went through many, many proverbs that talk about the value of making decisions with many people's advice. I'm not going to go through all those verses again. I'll give you three. Proverbs 20, verse 18, prepare plans by consultation and make war by wise guidance. Proverbs 11, 14, where there is no guidance, the people fall, but in an abundance of counselors, there is victory. Proverbs 24, 6 says, for by wise guidance you will wage war, and in abundance of counselors there is victory. So in our proverb here in verse 22, without consultation, that means that plans are made hastily and done precipitously without taking the time to get advice. Now, of course, some decisions have to be made on the spot. There just is no time to plan, but if you got time, you need to get advice as much as possible. That's just common sense. Proverbs 15:23, a man has joy in an apt answer, and how delightful is a timely word. A similar proverb is Proverbs 25:11, like apples of gold in settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances. Now this apt answer, or as in the parallel, this timely word is delightful. That could be delightful not only to the giver of the apt answer, but also the receiver of the apt answer and the timely word. An example of this might be, don't you believe in global warming? That would be the question. Don't you think that we ought to shackle all these corporations who are raising the temperature of the planet and threatening our existence so that the world will disappear in 10 years? The apt answer would be, do you care about people? Do you care about the fact that in Sri Lanka, the greeny weeny environmentalists have said that using synthetic fertilizer is a sin, and the government of Sri Lanka decided to copy the EU in that, and they banned synthetic fertilizer in Sri Lanka so that Sri Lanka, which formerly exported food, now has to import food, and people are starving now because they can't get enough food. That would be my apt answer to that. We go down to Proverbs 15:24. Proverbs 15:24 says, the path of life leads upward for the wise, that he may keep away from Sheol below. Sheol, of course, is the pit or the grave, and that's why it's said to be below. It's below our feet. In contrast to that, there's a path that leads to life. Life contrasts with death, and upward contrasts with below. Now, that upward could mean that the wise is walking towards heaven, as in Colossians 3:2, set your mind on the things above, not on the things that are on earth. Or it could be that the path of life leads upward for the wise because the path of life leads towards better circumstances in this life, not the next life. And again, I tend to think that the author of Proverbs, Solomon, was talking about things concerning this life. We go down to Proverbs 15:25. Solomon says, the Lord will tear down the house of the proud, but he will establish the boundary of the widow. First of all, what is house? Two options. It could be the physical dwelling of a proud man, and I believe that's what it is because of the parallelism here, because in the second part of Proverbs 15:25, we see the boundary of the widow established. That sounds like her property boundary line or her house boundary line. Of course, house could also mean family and descendants, but I don't think that's what it means here. Now, the Lord will tear down the house of the proud. We see that in Proverbs 12:7. The wicked are overthrown and are no more, but the house of the righteous will stand. Proud people are wicked and they are thrown down. So if you think about a proud man living in his house, God goes behind those strong barriers and knocks the walls down. But on the other hand, you got a widow. Her boundary lines are weak as opposed to the walls of a house. But God nevertheless will protect those boundary lines and protect her property. As John Gill says, when men, rich, proud, and oppressive, attempt to remove the landmark of the widow's border and so lessen her land and enlarge their own. That was prohibited in the law to move boundary stones. That was considered really bad to do because when you do that, you're stealing somebody's land, and land was very valuable back then. It's valuable today, too, but especially back then. And a widow is the perfect poster woman for people who are weak. She has no husband to protect her. but God will protect her because he will establish her boundary line, keep the wicked from stealing the boundary stones. We go down to Proverbs 15:26. Solomon says, evil plans are an abomination to the Lord, but pleasant words are pure. Of course, those pleasant words are opposed to the evil plans. Proverbs 8:8-9 says, all the utterances of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing crooked or perverted in them. Those are pleasant words. They are all straightforward to him who understands and right to those who find knowledge. We go to Proverbs 15:27. Solomon says, he who profits illicitly troubles his own house, but he who hates bribes will live. As Adam Clark says, the man who makes illicit money, illicit profits, is a torment to himself and his family because of his avariciousness and penury, and a curse to those with whom he deals. We go down to Proverbs 15:28. Solomon says, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. Pondering takes time, but the mouth of the wicked just pours it out quickly. The righteous ponders, that means he thinks before he speaks, he meditates what he shall say. Now, an interesting question arises here. Does this proverb contradict what Jesus said in Luke 21:14? Jesus is trying to prepare his disciples for the upcoming persecution from the apostate Jews, non-believing Jews who are going to persecute the Christians. And so Jesus says, so make up your minds not to prepare beforehand to defend yourselves. Well, that sounds like it's the direct opposite of what Solomon enjoins here. The heart of the righteous ponders how to answer. Think about how you're going to answer. Prepare your defense. But Jesus says, don't prepare your defense. John Gill notices the apparent contradiction, and he says, well, what Jesus was talking about was an extraordinary case, referring to Christians who were being persecuted. Solomon is just talking about in general, when people are presented with a problem, some people just spout off, or some people think about it. I think that's the best way to reconcile that apparent contradiction. Adam Clark says that the wicked person who pours out evil things has a tongue that runs before his wit, or the righteous person has a tongue which never runs before his wit. We go down to Proverbs 15:29. Solomon says, the Lord is far from the wicked, but he hears the prayer of the righteous. God is far from the wicked as far as aid and comfort and goodwill. Those are all far from the wicked, but God is not far from the wicked as far as his presence, because God is omnipresent. He's everywhere. And also, God is not far from the wicked in the aspect of judgment, because he's going to judge the wicked. What Solomon means here is God is far from the wicked because God will not aid the wicked. We go down to Proverbs 15:30. Bright eyes gladden the heart. Good news puts fat on the bones. That's the NASB translation. Other translations read it like this. The NIV says, a cheerful look gladdens the heart. The KJV says, the light of the eyes gladdens the heart. It seems to me that it would be a happy heart, a glad heart would make the eyes bright, but the causation runs the other way. I guess you could say because of what these bright eyes are looking at, that makes the eyes bright, and that in turn gladdens the heart. Adam Clark says, nature and art are continually placing before our view a multitude of the most resplendent images, each of which is calculated to give pleasure. The end of the verse says, good news puts fat on the bones. Other translations of that, good news brings health to the bones. That's the NIV. The Holman Christian Study Bible says, good news strengthens the bones. Well, to me, this is just an observation. Good news makes people happy. Now, this good news could be a good report about oneself. In other words, something good has happened to me personally, or it could be good news about things in general for everybody around you. Either way, it's nice to have. Christians are not exempt from normal human emotions, incidentally. The difference is we can get comfort in our grief, and we temper our joy knowing that earthly delights are temporal. They're passing. Eternal delights come when we get to the other side. We go now to Proverbs 15:31. Solomon says, he whose ear listens to the life-giving reproof will dwell among the wise. That's like Proverbs 10:17. He is on the path of life who heeds instruction, but he who ignores reproof goes astray. It's hard to listen to people criticizing you, but if you will listen to the criticism, maybe even reject the criticism, that's all right, but you listen to it, and you make course corrections, you're a wise person. Proverbs 15:32, Solomon says, "He who neglects discipline despises himself, but he who listens to reproof acquires understanding." That's very similar to the previous proverb. And discipline I've already talked about on verse 5, so this is a little repeat here. Verse 32, we go to verse 33 now of Proverbs 15. "The fear of the Lord is the instruction for wisdom, and before honor comes humility." You want to be wise? Don't really focus on reading a bunch of books or listen to a bunch of gurus. Fear the Lord first. Proverbs 9:10, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." The first thing you do, the beginning of wisdom, is you fear the Lord. You reverence the Lord. He'll give you all the wisdom you need. Proverbs 1:7, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction." The beginning of wisdom and the beginning of knowledge is reverence for God. And now we will finish off the whole chapter of Proverbs 15 with the last part of verse 33. "And before honor comes humility." If you want to be honored, you better learn how to be humble first. Just as pride goes before a fall, humility goes before honor. Let me read you several verses, some from the Gospels, some from Proverbs, which say that humility goes before honor, which is basically the same way of saying pride goes before a fall. Matthew 23:12, "Whoever exalts himself shall be humbled, and whoever humbles himself shall be exalted." There you have both ideas in one verse. The man who exalts himself is proud, but he's going to fall. He's going to be humbled. The man who humbles himself shall be exalted later. Luke 14:11, "For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." That's the parallel verse. Luke 18:14, "I tell you, this man went to his house justified rather than the other, for everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but he who humbles himself will be exalted." This is the famous story of the two Pharisees, or the two people. One was a tax collector who said, I'm a sinner, and the Pharisee was standing up before God, beating his chest and saying, "Thank God I'm not like this horrible tax collector." And Jesus says, pride goes before fall. The tax collector will be exalted because of his humility. The proud Pharisee will be brought down because of his pride. Proverbs 16:18, "Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before stumbling." Proverbs 18:12, "Before destruction the heart of man is haughty, but humility goes before honor." Proverbs 29:23, "A man's pride will bring him low, but a humble spirit will obtain honor." Proverbs 23:12, "Apply your heart to discipline and your ears to words of knowledge." Proverbs 11:2, "When pride comes, then comes dishonor, but with the humble is wisdom." And think about the supreme example of humility. Jesus didn't think it would be robbery to consider himself equal with God. He didn't think that was a thing that he needed to grasp at, because he was already equal with God. But nonetheless, he emptied himself of all of his divine prerogatives, humbled himself even to the extent of death on a cross. And what happened after that act of humility? He was raised up in glory. Humility comes before honor, as Proverbs 15:33, second part of the verse says, "And before honor comes humility." And Jesus is the ultimate example of that. So now we are finished with Proverbs 15 and are prepared to move in our next audio to Proverbs 16, which I will call Proverbs of Solomon, Part 7. I hope you stay tuned with us for that next audio, get some more wisdom, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.